Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another Mining Stock Education episode. I'm Bill Powers, your host. We are providing ongoing coverage of Mining Stock Education sponsor Aton Resources and their Rod Ruin project that they've been drilling right now. Aton trades on the Venture Exchange in Toronto under the ticker AAN and on the OTC markets in the States under the ticker ANLBF. Aton's a gold explorer in Egypt in the Arabian Nubian Shield. They've already put out some phenomenal drill results on their Rod Ruin project in the last few weeks. One hole even hit 36 meters at 12.47 grams per ton gold, and that was starting from 5 meters below surface. Joining me today on the program to discuss this project and the recent drill results is Javier Orduña, Aton's exploration manager. Javier has over 20 plus years of experience as an exploration geologist working on many continents on both greenfield and brownfield projects. So Javier, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi Bill. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you today.
Yes, well, I'm thankful that Mark put us in contact with one another as you oversee the drill program and the exploration program there. Let's start, before we zero in on the Rod Ruin project, could we back up and talk about the Arabian Nubian Shield and the large land package, the Abu Marawa concession that Aton possesses?
Okay, well, it's we're located in Egypt, of course. We've been exploring in Egypt for about 10 years now. It's a pretty interesting and underexplored part of the world. We're in the Arabian Nubian Shield, and the part of which we're in is the Nubian Shield, which is obviously on the northeast African side of it. The ANS is a neoproterozoic shield area that has effectively been, it's about 600 million years to 800 million years old, the rocks that we're working in. And it's an ancient cratonic area that has been split into relatively recently by the development of the Red Sea. So we see similar rocks and similar mineralization types both in the North African Nubian side where we are, and also on the Saudi Arabian, the Arabian Peninsula on the other side. So what is applicable to Saudi Arabia and the Arabian Peninsula is certainly also applicable to the Nubian side. So that includes Egypt, that includes Eritrea, and Ethiopia and various other parts of Northeast Africa. It's a pretty prospective part of the world, as I say. It's really very underexplored. I think there's good exposure, which we don't see in other parts of the world, such as maybe Canada and certainly Australia. And it's really underexplored. There's a significant number of fairly major mines and projects in the area. I don't know how familiar some of all your listeners are with it. And certainly in Egypt, we have the Sukari mine operated by Centamin, which is without doubt a world-class gold deposit. They currently have reserves and resources of total reserves and resources of almost 20 million ounces. So we're talking a fairly substantial gold deposit. And they're mining at 500,000 ounces per annum. So that is a big gold mine by anyone's estimation. There's numerous other deposits within the Arabian Nubian Shield. Historical mine on the Saudi Arabian side is Ma'ad ad-Dahab. Now that has been mined, that's been mined going back to pre-Ptolemaic times, so probably over 3,500 years. And, you know, going back into the history and the legends, and people have described it as the original King Solomon's mines. But that, again, is another significant and large gold mine which has been producing for many, many hundreds of years. So these are the kind of targets we're looking for and possibly analogous to in the Arabian Nubian Shield. The ANS is also relatively well known for VMS-style deposits, which have been explored and exploited in the last decade or so. Obviously, most people are fairly familiar with Bisha, which is a pretty big, significant VMS deposit in Eritrea. There's a number of other deposits in Eritrea, VMSs. And again, people are probably reasonably familiar with Barrick's Jabal Sayid projects in Saudi Arabia. So the ANS, it's an important part of the world. It's a significant geological area, which carries significant gold styles of gold mineralization and precious metal mineralization. And as I said, for various reasons, political, geographical, it really is fairly underexplored. So we've been here for a while, Aton have been here for a while, and we're pretty excited about the area. In terms of our license area, we operate the Abu Marawat concession. The concession is almost 740 square kilometers in size. Now, again, by anyone's stretch, that is a fairly sizable area, and we're quite happy to have the opportunity to explore it. To give you, again, a little bit of background on the company is largely focused on two deposits within that area. So since we first started really doing work on the ground in about 2009, the first 3 or 4 years were really concentrated on drilling out a resource at the Abu Marawat deposit. We then shifted our focus over to Hamama, where we've drilled out another resource at Hamama West. And within the last probably 18 months, I suppose, we've pivoted away from directly exploring these two main deposits and have really started at looking at the regional potential throughout the whole of the Abu Marawat concession. Now, as I say, it's a fairly big area. It's, you can get around to most parts of it, but you can't just drive from A to B. Some of the terrain, as you're probably aware, is fairly rugged. So to get from one end of a license, and we're based at Hamama, which is at the western end of a license, to get to other parts, you know, you're looking at two and a half hours potentially to get to the furthest parts of a license. And we haven't been everywhere. But what we have done, as I say, is we've really been looking at the regional potential as we see it. And there are numerous other potential areas and prospects that we've been looking at over the last 18 months, which we've been going through fairly systematically evaluating them. And we've developed what we think are some interesting ideas, and certainly some of them look really great in terms of exploring them. But towards the end of last year, 2017, we were turning our attention to some old processing sites at East Eridea. And there were some underground workings in that area. And we were, again, reviewing as part of our systematic review of known mineralization sites within the license area. It was basically the work we were doing at East Eridea, which led us into the discovery at Rod Ruin.
And how did that discovery come about? When I talked to Mark, he talked about even using satellite imagery to discover it.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, Ed, I think most people who've worked in Sudan and Egypt are aware and fully aware that satellite imagery is a very exceedingly useful technique out here. We're not in, you know, we're not in a situation like Canada, for example, where you have vegetation cover. Essentially, the area is entirely covered with rock and sand, so you have plenty of good exposure, other than in wadi and valley areas where you have sediments in the valley system. So basically, you have bare rock sticking out at surface. Now, the ancients, as you're aware, have been mining in Egypt. There is a history of gold mining going back through Egypt well over 3,000-4,000 years back to the Old Kingdom times and possibly before that. So, you know, people have been mining gold in Nubia and what is now Egypt for, you know, upwards of about 5,000 years probably. And you can actually see these sites, you know, because of the nature of the ground, they're still there. It's very dry. We don't have vegetation cover. We have bare rock exposed at surface, so you can see evidence of the ancient workings. One of the things we did as part of our regional exploration study was spectral imaging, a couple of spectral surveys, a couple of remote sensing surveys, which were quite useful. We did a preliminary Landsat ASTA survey, which was very useful, and then we did some follow-up, a couple of more detailed follow-up surveys over the immediate Abu Marawat and Hamama areas. Now, Rod Ruin didn't actually lie in one of the two detailed follow-up areas. It effectively lay between the areas selected for detailed follow-up, but it was stood out fairly strongly as a spectral clay iron anomaly. Now, the work we were doing at East Eridea, it has been well known, there's a reasonably good volume of literature available on ancient workings in Egypt and through, and as I say, through Sudan, through the Nubian area. And as I mentioned before, you can see all the ancient mining sites. They're there and they're clear on the ground. There's old houses. You walk out of these sites and there's ancient bits of pottery lying around, which have probably been lying on the ground for 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years, depending on how old these workings actually are. So there's useful archaeological evidence, which it's a very useful tool to be used in this part of the world. So there was a well-known processing site at East Eridir. There was a fairly substantial volume of ancient process waste, tailings, but the actual site, the location of the source of this ore had never been located. So we went back and we looked at this work. We looked at tailings, we sampled some of this material and some of it was going, you know, we got a few samples which were above 20 grams per ton, and that was in the tailings. So clearly the primary rock which they had been mining was of a pretty decent grade and represented a fairly good attractive target if they were leaving 20 grams behind. So we went back, we looked at this site, we discovered some underground workings which were partially covered by wadi sediments a little bit further to the north. We did some trenching over them, but that didn't really answer the question, what was the source of the ore that was being processed at East Eridir. So we started tracking our way up the wadis near the East Eridir site, and as we went, you know, it was boots on the ground stuff. It was old-fashioned boots on the ground, sort of walking. A lot of it was walking the ground. And we were finding some pretty substantial and significant evidence, archaeological evidence of ancient processing. The further we went, then you could see more and more of these processing sites up side valleys. Now, we could also tell from the types of sites we were seeing, they're relatively technologically advanced. So it looks like their early Arabic period, so we're going back to pre 1000 AD, so at least over 1,000 years old, these sites, but they're relatively significant and sophisticated, and there's evidence of step washing tables. So what the ancients were doing was damming water in side gullies, and they would dam water, and then they had a series of step washing tables which they would use to actually wash the gold out of a processed ore. And a lot of it comes back to Jason and the Argonaut stuff. So they would actually use fleeces, they would actually use animal skins and lay them out on the washing tables and wash the crushed ore over this material, and the gold would actually be captured in these fleeces. So that's where the legend of Jason and the Argonauts and the golden fleece actually came from. So it was evidence of this kind of technology that we were seeing on the ground. So combined with this, and combined with the spectral imagery at the Rod Ruin site, the target which we had at Rod Ruin, we then went back and looked at the satellite imagery. And the more we looked, we could actually start to identify a number of features actually at Rod Ruin which looked interesting. We couldn't be exactly clear what they were. In a lot of places, you see evidence of old houses, very distinct old mining settlements, and they're very distinctive of mining ancient mining areas within Egypt, and there's hundreds of them around. We didn't see many houses at Rod Ruin, but what we did see was features on the ground that looked like they could have been excavations. It wasn't clear, but it looked like they might have been. But what we could see, which was particularly interesting and particularly distinctive, was a number of paths, and there were some fairly clear tracks and paths which led up to the areas that were of interest, the spectral anomaly, and they basically led down from this fairly remote mountainous area down into the valleys or the wadis down to the processing site. So we put all this together and we thought, well, we need to go and check this place out. So sure enough, we went and checked this place out, and we were pretty impressed with what we found the day we went up there.
And since that discovery, then you've done a lot of trenching, which has come back with great results. And the trenching also relates to constructing the roads to bring the drill rigs up there. You've been drilling now for several weeks, and you're using reverse circulation drilling. Can you talk about why you chose to use reverse circulation drilling and why it's better for this project rather than diamond drilling?
Yeah, sure. If I could just step back very quickly into how we actually got to where we are now, I'll go for it pretty quick. But I'd just like to emphasize the site which we found at Rod Ruin. It was pretty remote. It's pretty rugged. It's pretty isolated. So we were walking basically 10 kilometers in now every day over some pretty tough sort of ground. So when we discovered it in December last year, for the first 3 or 4 months, we had the field teams walking in now every day, sort of clambering over some fairly, as I say, tough terrain. And we did a series of surface sampling programs, which gave us the confidence. They came back with good results, of course. We took about 100, between 100 and 200 surface samples. We tried to sample over the whole Rod Ruin area as wide and as comprehensive an area of things that looked interesting, and pretty much everything came back mineralized. So we developed our confidence that we were seeing mineralization spread over a very wide area at Rod Ruin. Subsequently to that, in March, after we'd carried out these initial surface sampling programs, we then started pushing a road into site. Now that took us, we started in March and we completed it just after the end of Ramadan, which was about middle of July. So that took us about 3.5 months, basically. We shut down over Ramadan. Not much happens in the Middle East during Ramadan. So it took us about 3.5 months using excavators, basically, to push this road up through the mountains to the Rod Ruin site. It's pretty tough terrain, as I say, but we were fairly pleased with the progress to get there. Around the middle of July, as I say, we arrived at the area which we call Aladdin's Hill, which is the main area of ancient workings. They're certainly not by any means the only area of ancient workings, but they're probably the main area of the largest workings which we discovered. We got there around the middle of July, and as soon as we got there, we've now got 3 excavators on site. We started pushing roads around the whole site to start to develop drill access to bring the rigs in. As we started pushing roads, a lot of the area, again, I'm sure most of your listeners will have seen some of the photos. They'll be familiar with the nature of the terrain. A lot of it's on fairly steep slopes. We're seeing a lot of scree cover on slopes, so we're not always seeing fresh rock that's exposed. Now, as we started pushing rocks around, pushing roads around the site, we started exposing mineralized bedrock. So what we've been doing is channel sampling along roads where we see what looks like mineralization and what is in mineralization. And we've had some pretty good results come back from that. So we're exposing pretty wide areas of gold plus zinc mineralization at surface over significant areas. Now, this work's still ongoing as we push further to the southeast down the south ridge. We've just got to an area at the far end, which we call the GF zone, and we're building new pads there. And that's only, we've only just got there in the last couple of days. So what we're doing is exposing a whole load of new gossanous material down there and also up high on the south ridge. So as we go, we're exposing mineralization. And as I say, we're sampling it. And clearly your listeners will have seen some results, and we think they're pretty significant. But what these results are showing is that it's confirming good mineralization at surface over a pretty wide area at the Rod Ruin prospect. We started drilling at Rod Ruin. The plan has always been to bring in a multi-purpose rig. There's been no RC drilling done in Egypt going back over 10 years since the early days of exploration or at the Sukari project. Now, RC, I started my career in Australia, and RC is a perfectly standard technique that was developed in Australia for drilling oxidized ground and dry ground. What you actually get, we drill a 140-millimeter hole, so it's a big hole. It's much larger than, say, HQ or PQ-sized diamond core, and it's also about a quarter to a third the cost of diamond drilling per meter. So in terms of meters drilled, you get an awful lot more bang for your buck from using RC. When you're in dry ground, you get a perfectly good sample. Our samples are weighing about 35 kilograms per meter, which is a pretty substantial sample, which is certainly a lot more than a meter of HQ core. So you get a good big sample of rock, and you can log it, and you can get a lot of geological information out of it, and it's a perfectly useful, valid technique to be used. So it's cheap, it's effective, you get a good sample out of it, and it works well, particularly in oxidized, but certainly in dry ground. Now, we've got a very big compressor. We've got a, you know, the compressor will produce up to 500 PSI, which is a lot of air. So that has the capacity to lift a lot of samples. So this rig can probably drill to about 300 meters without any problems, RC. So certainly to start us off on this project, that covers pretty much what we need. So it's an obvious, it's a valid and it's a useful technique. There's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't or wouldn't use RC. There's a number of logistical issues which make RC a lot better to use, frankly, in Egypt as well. If we're doing diamond drilling, we would have to supply the rig with water. We'd need a flush, whereas with the RC, all we have is a big compressor that sits on site, and that effectively is your flush. Now, where we're working, it's a fairly remote and it's a fairly dry area, as I think everyone is well aware. So we have to truck in water. Now, we know from our previous experience of drilling similar ground conditions at Hamama, that as soon as you drill into holes or voids with diamond drilling, you can lose tons and tons of water into these holes. You lose your circulation. It can become a real problem with drilling. So we knew that was likely to be the case. And given the remoteness of a site, then being able to supply the rigs with water flush was a logistical issue. It's something we will have to look at going down the track, but it was not something which we wanted to get involved with straight away. So, and our experience, as you know, we've hit an awful lot of underground voids. And if you're diamond drilling, you just pour your flush, you pour your water, and that will just disappear off into the ground. So it's a lot easier to drill some of this broken ground with voids than it with RC than it actually would be with diamond, because you would just lose, you'd lose your circulation into the voids as you see in this oxidized material. So we're very happy using RC. We think it's appropriate, and we actually think it's the best type of drilling for the type of ground we're looking at here at Rod Ruin, certainly to start with.
A few weeks ago, you released the first three drill holes, and the market reacted very enthusiastically to that. Please talk about those first three holes.
Okay. The first three holes were targeted at the area we call Aladdin's Hill. Aladdin's Hill is specifically, there's an area of mineralization which is associated with a number of deep ancient workings, which we've been down some of them. We've been down some and sampled them to a depth of about 40 meters below ground level. We know they're well mineralized. We reported that in April, I think, when we sampled these underground workings. This is what we believe the ancient miners were exploiting. This is where we believe they were getting a lot of the high-grade material which was processed at East Eridir from. From what we've seen, we're pretty confident that the paths lead from Rod Ruin down to East Eridir. So, as I say, we've developed our theories as we've gone along, but we believe that all the evidence, geological evidence, ties up that the ancients were mining high-grade mineralization at Rod Ruin, some of which came from the Aladdin's Hill area specifically, and taking it down to East Eridir. So at Aladdin's Hill, that's at the northwestern end of the South Ridge, and it's where the road, the access road, came in. So it was the area which we first arrived at, and it had the deepest mineralization. Now, the mineralization here is these, I won't call them quartz veins because they're not quartz veins, but they are zones of silicification which were selectively mined by the ancients within a zone of exceedingly altered rock. Now, the rock types at Rod Ruin are essentially can be divided into two types. One is carbonate rocks, and the second type is sediments and metasediments, mainly slates and grey wacky sandstone type rocks. Now, at Aladdin's Hill, the rocks are exceedingly altered. We think they're probably highly altered sediments, but we can't be 100% sure. But what we know, and again, we've sampled over the surface, there's this zone of mineralization that is wholly mineralized. We did a grid pattern of sampling over the surface, which was in conjunction with the channel sampling we've done. And every single sample which we took, and these were not selected samples. We rock chipped. We would select an area, just go up to it, and non-selectively rock chip it. And all the sampling over the Aladdin's Hill area, the altered rock between the actual high-grade shoots, which the ancient miners had mined out, that averaged 4 grams per ton at surface, which is not bad. So we targeted the first three holes on Aladdin's Hill on this specific rock type. The first one, we didn't quite hit what we were expecting. We didn't go into this altered material. It was to the west of the fault, so, but that came back with two reasonable intersections. Holes two and three intersected good thicknesses of this altered material, and particularly hole three had two very high-grade zones, 3-4 meter wide zones, within a approximately 40 meter zone of mineralization, 40 to 50 meter zone of mineralization. Now, it was all mineralized down to about 50 meters. Some of it we didn't report at all because it was below the cutoff grade we used, which was 0.5 gram. But within that zone, we had two zones. I think one of them assayed 221 grams plus a couple of tens next to it. And there was another zone, a couple of about 10, 15 meters further down the hole, 1 meter of which assayed, I think, 94 meters. And again, there was a couple of other assays. It wasn't just a one-off. We had another couple of assays within that zone, which were going 10, 15, 15 grams. But essentially, this reflects what we've said and what we believe to be the case all along, where within this zone of highly altered rock, there are specific tight zones which were targeted by the ancient miners, which carry exceedingly high grades of mineralization, such as the 221 that we saw in hole three. So the drilling confirmed what we expected to see, a broad zone of this altered rock containing within it restricted zones. The whole thing's obviously not, it'd be nice if it was, but clearly the whole thing is not going to be grading 200 plus grams. But what we're seeing is broader zones of mineralization with very high grade zones within it. And this is a specific example which we're seeing at Aladdin's Hill. Since the second tranche of results which we've put out, we haven't been targeting this specific altered area, but we've been targeting more Gossan-hosted mineralization, which is associated with gossanous slates and sediments and also carbonate rocks. And we see an awful lot of this mineralization all over exposed at surface, all over the whole of the Rod Ruin area. And as we're currently pushing our roads out to develop new pads, we believe there's potentially very significant amounts of this Gossan-hosted mineralization. Excuse me. So what we're seeing, again, is this mineralization is not all going to be 10, 20, 30, 100 gram mineralization, the Gossan-hosted mineralization, but there's likely to be very large volumes of it. So, you know, large bulk tons at a lower grade, but still a perfectly respectable, mineable, economic ore grade. So that's what we're seeing. And it's what we've always said all along. If you go back and look for our press releases and our descriptions of what we've said we think we have at Rod Ruin, we've always thought since day one that we're seeing two styles of mineralization. One is the Gossan-hosted mineralization, which is lower grade, and within that, you will see the higher grade shoots, higher grade zones, which were obviously preferentially exploited and mined by the ancients, some of which run, you know, some spectacular grades. So our target at Rod Ruin is going to be a large bulk deposit, you know, multi-million tons. It's going to, you know, it's a sizable target. We see mineralization exposed at surface over an area covering 700 meters long strike by 400 meters width. Not the whole of it's not mineralized, of course, but you're seeing a very broad spread of mineralization at surface. We also have vertical elevation variations within that. So we're looking at potentially mineralization spread over a very large area at economic grades. And within that, we believe there will be some exceedingly high-grade sweeteners, one of which we drilled with hole ROP3 at the beginning of the program.
Centamin Sukari's world-class gold mine, which you've referenced already, is 200 kilometers to your south. They have up to 20 million ounces of reserves and resources, gold ounces. Do you think what you're looking at here at Rod Ruin, does it have the potential to reach of that scale?
Well, that's a good question, Bill. It's a bit early days. I think the geology is very different. One of the things that's particularly interesting about our Abu Marowak concession is we're seeing a whole bunch of different styles of mineralization within our own license area. So we're seeing more standard orogenic style gold mineralization, structurally controlled mineralization. At Hamama, we see again carbonate-related base metal, precious and base metal mineralization, not entirely dissimilar to what we see at Rodruin, not the same, but it looks similar in certain ways. So we're seeing a whole number of styles of mineralization. We've also identified what we believe are intrusion-related styles of gold mineralization, and certainly this looks to be a significant style of mineralization for Egypt, probably also down into Sudan, and also occurs in Saudi Arabia. So we believe we're in a significant IR province, which obviously has the potential to host some pretty significant gold deposits. Does Rodruin have the capacity to grow to something like Sukari? Well, as I say, I can't really say. It's not the same type of deposit. It's a bit hard to know exactly what Sukari is. Centamin are not exactly free with information. They don't publish an awful lot of information about it, but certainly it appears to be, Sukari appears to be related to granitic intrusive hosts. Is it an IR deposit? I don't know. Is it a porphyry gold deposit? I don't know. But it appears to be more that style of deposit. Rodruin is something different. So I don't want to draw a direct comparison between, yes, it could be another Sukari, but clearly what we are sitting on is another very significantly mineralized system. It has a huge footprint. You know, not too many gold systems have a footprint which we've discovered at surface, and we've only just started, drilling. So clearly it's a very large system. Clearly it has a lot of potential, and we are very optimistic. As I say, it's very early days. The drilling is showing a lot of interesting stuff. We're starting to see mineralization in fresh rocks now, deeper drilling, base metal associated mineralization. We're waiting on assays, but we're seeing galena and chalcopyrite and sphalerite in fresh rocks, which gives us the copper and the gold and the zinc, which we see at surface. So we're now starting to confirm the mineralization we're seeing at depth. Well, mineralization we're seeing at surface, we're certainly starting to see what we believe is its analog in the fresh rock. So we believe we're onto a very big mineralized system. What is the potential for it to grow into? Well, who knows? How long is a piece of string?
As investors keep watch of this program, what should we expect going into the end of the year?
Well, we plan to keep drilling and more or less up until Christmas as we continue to push over South Ridge, and we may even start pushing up onto North Ridge. Our intention is to expose as many of the areas that are mineralized at surface. We're not just going to concentrate in one particular area. As I say, we've got a big area. We're not trying to drill out a resource in this first phase. What we're trying to do is get out and drill test as much of the Rodruin prospect as is practical to do at an early stage to give us an idea of the potential of the area. So we will be more or less drilling until Christmas, and we hopefully we'll be putting out a steady stream of news on the drill results. Now, not every result is going to be like the first ones. It wasn't an entirely coincidental that we targeted what we thought was going to be one of the best areas with the first holes. But we will certainly be targeting mineralization over a large area, and we will be expecting to report on significant zones and widths of mineralization, which we believe will be potentially indicative of a bulk potential of a deposit. And we also hope that we will be reporting some pretty good grades in some holes, which will be confirming our belief that there are high grade zones within the bulk deposit, which we think we're sitting on. So time will tell. As I say, we don't have any more assays through. We'll keep putting them out as they come through, but I am confident that we'll be drilling out what we think is going to be a pretty substantial bulk gold deposit, and the information will keep coming through over the next few months.
So investors, to stay on top of the latest news flow, go to atonresources.com. Make sure you sign up for their email list. So as soon as the press releases about these forthcoming drill results are released, you can get those first thing in the morning. Remember, Aton trades on the Venture Exchange in Toronto under the ticker AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF. Well, Javier, I've enjoyed our discussion. It's been very enlightening. Thank you for taking the time to update us on this project.
Yeah, no worries, Will. It was good to talk to you, and hopefully we can catch up again.
Absolutely. Have a great day. For millennia, ancient pharaohs prospered from unparalleled riches made possible by Egypt's resource-rich gold deposits. But despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world, but that's all about to change. Aton Resources is leading the charge on the Egyptian mining revival. As the only public exploration company in Egypt, Aton Resources has first-mover advantage. Focused on their 100% owned Abu Marawat concession, Aton Resources is advancing several exploration targets, including the recent discovery of the legendary Lost Mountain of Gold at Rod Ruin. Learn more about this exciting drill program and other news at atonresources.com. Aton trades on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF. Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.